the sources from Nevada, from Chattanooga County. Hare Krishna. So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service. There are two verses, 28 and 29. And the way they've arranged the schedule here today is that this verse will be covered over 2 days, and so the purport will also be covered over 2 days. So the purport is split also. So we'll do the first half. And what I would like is, because the purport is a little long, it'd be nice, I think, one of the things that I learned from going to Gainesville is that they have very enthusiastic reading of the purport. Especially if it's a little long, it can get a little dull with just one person saying it. So, is there another copy of the Bhagavatam back there? Or does anybody have facility where they can read a paragraph of the purport? I'll read a paragraph. Huh? Okay, so it can happen then.
Yes, sir.
So maybe... Okay, well, I'll read the first paragraph, and then maybe others can read a paragraph at a time. Keep it a little lively in here. Microphone should be ready on hand so it doesn't get too broken up either, otherwise it's confusing. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this verse is also a well-known verse, easy to chant, and so maybe we can get a lot of participation in chanting it today also. Vasudeva para veda. Vasudeva paramaka. Vasudeva para yoga. Vasudeva para kriya. Vasudeva param jnanam. Vasudeva param tapa. Vasudeva paro dharmo. Vasudeva paragati. Please chant. Vasudeva para veda. Vasudeva para maka. Vasudeva para yoga. Vasudeva para kriya. Vasudeva param jnanam. Vasudeva param tapa. Vasudeva paro dharmo. Vasudeva paragati. Vasudeva para veda. Vasudeva para maka. Vasudeva para yoga. Vasudeva para kriya. Vasudeva Param Jnanam. Vasudeva Param Tapa. Vasudeva Paro Dharmo. Vasudeva Paragati. Okay. Word meanings. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Para, the ultimate goal. Veda, revealed scriptures. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Para, for worshipping. Maka, sacrifices. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Para, the means of attaining. Yoga, mystic paraphernalia. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Para, under his control. Kriya, fruitive activities. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Param, the supreme. Jnanam, knowledge. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Param, best. Tapa, austerity. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Para, superior quality. Dharma, religion. Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. Para, ultimate. Gati, goal of life. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please Him. Yoga is for realizing Him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by Him only. He is the supreme. He is supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know Him. Religion, Dharma, is rendering loving service unto Him. He is the supreme goal of life. Purport. That Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is the only object of worship is confirmed in these two slokas. In the Vedic literature, there is the same objective, establishing one's relationship and ultimately reviving our lost loving service unto Him. That is the sum and substance of the Veda. In the Bhagavad Gita, the same theory is confirmed by the Lord in His own words. The ultimate purpose of the Vedas is to know Him only. All revealed scriptures are prepared by the Lord through His incarnation in the body of Srila Vyasadeva, just to remind the fallen souls, conditioned by material nature, of Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. No demigod can award freedom from material bondage. That is the verdict of all the Vedic literatures. Impersonalists who have no information of the personality of Godhead minimize the omnipotence. Say it again. Omnipotency of the Supreme Lord and put Him on equal footing with all other living beings. And for this act of such impersonalists get freedom from material bondage only with great difficulty. They can surrender unto Him only after many, many births in the culture of transcendental knowledge. Someone want to pick up reading there? Yes. Right there.
One may argue that their Vedic activities are based on sacrificial ceremonies. That is true. But all such sacrifices are also meant for realizing the truth about Vasudeva. Another name of Vasudeva is Yajna. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that all sacrifices and all activities are to be conducted for the satisfaction of Yajna, or Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. This is the case also with the yoga systems. Yoga means to get into touch with the Supreme Lord. The process, however, includes several bodily features such as asana, dhyana, pranayama, and meditation. All of them are meant for concentrating upon the localized aspect of Vasudeva represented as Paramatma. Paramatma realization is but partial realization of Vasudeva. And if one is successful in that attempt, one realizes Vasudeva in full. But by ill luck, look, most yogis are stranded by the powers of mysticism achieved through the bodily process. Ill-fated yogis are given a chance in the next birth by being placed in families of good learned brahmanas or in the families of rich merchants in order to execute the unfinished task of Vasudeva realization. If such fortunate brahmanas and sons of rich men properly utilize the chance, they can easily realize Vasudeva in good association with saintly persons. Unfortunately, such preferred persons are captivated again by material wealth and honor, and thus they practically forget the aim of life.
Okay, can one of the ladies read?
This is also so for the culture of knowledge. According to the Bhagavad Gita, there are 18 items in culturing knowledge. By such culture of knowledge, one becomes gradually prideless, devoid of vanity, non-violent, forbearing, simple, devoted to the great spiritual master and self-controlled. By culture of knowledge, one becomes unattached to heart and home, and becomes conscious of the miseries due to death, birth, old age, and disease. And all culture of knowledge culminates in devotional service to the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Therefore, Vasudeva is the ultimate aim in culturing all different branches of knowledge. Culture of knowledge leading one to the transcendental plane of meeting Vasudeva is real knowledge. Physical knowledge in its various branches is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita as ajnana, or the opposite of real knowledge. The ultimate aim of physical knowledge is to satisfy the senses, which means prolongation of the term of material existence and thereby continuance of the threefold miseries. So prolonging the miserable life of material existence is nescience. But the same physical knowledge leading to the way of spiritual understanding helps one to end the miserable life of physical existence and to begin the life of physical existence and to begin the life of spiritual existence on the plane of Vasudeva.
The same applies to all kinds of austerities. Tapasya means voluntary acceptance of bodily pains to achieve some higher end of life. Ravana and Hiranyakasipu underwent a severe type of bodily torture to achieve the end of sense gratification. Sometimes modern politicians also undergo severe types of austerities to achieve some political end. This is not actually tapasya. One should accept voluntarily bodily inconvenience for the sake of knowing Vasudeva, because that is the way of real austerities. Otherwise, all forms of austerities are classified as modes of passion and ignorance. Passion and ignorance cannot end the miseries of life. Only the mode of goodness can mitigate the threefold miseries of life. Vasudeva and Devaki, the so-called father and mother of Lord Krishna, underwent penances to get Vasudeva as their son. Lord Sri Krishna is the father of all living beings, Bhagavad Gita 14.4. Therefore, he is the original living, he is the original eternal enjoyer amongst all other enjoyers. Therefore, no one can be his begetting father, as the ignorant may think. Lord Sri Krishna agreed to become the son of Vasudeva and Devaki upon being pleased with their severe austerities. Therefore, if any austerities have to be done, they must be done to achieve the end of knowledge, Vasudeva. So we're breaking the purport up there. Tomorrow's speaker will finish the purport and also speak on this verse. But at this point, we'll make some comments. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramadhitamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So the overall theme of what I wanted to present this morning It can be summed up in one word, and that is purpose, purpose or purposeful. So to begin with, I'd like to take you all on a little journey back in time to a place you should be familiar with, but maybe we're not familiar with, and that's at the beginning of creation. Srila Prabhupada said that each of us took the position of Lord Brahma at the beginning of creation. So I want to take you back to that opportunity that we all had. Brahma awoke on a lotus flower. And as he looked around, he saw unending sky, unending ocean, and not much else. He was on the lotus flower, and so he climbed down the stem of the flower, kind of a Kafka-esque type of situation, taking a stairway that leads nowhere. So he took the stairway down, climbed down the lotus stem, and couldn't find any more information about what he was, who he was, or what he was supposed to do. It was all confusing to him. But Brahma had a quality that starkly differentiates him from philosophers who also face the same question of what is the meaning of the circumstances they find themselves in and the meaning of this universe. You may know in the last century, existential philosophers, mainly from France, Jean-Paul Sartre, Albert Camus, the existentialists, they also were like Brahma. They looked at the world and saw unending confusion, no meaning to the interactions of their environment. And they concluded that life is meaningless. Life is meaningless. But Lord Brahma was different than them in that although he also, in his own environment, saw just interaction, seemingly random interaction of the material elements around him, as he was on top of the lotus stem, the wind started blowing. And the stem was blowing back and forth, and the ocean below became very turbulent. So there was a lot of confusion in terms of the material circumstances that he found himself in. But what differentiates Brahma from these existential philosophers who conclude that there is no meaning to life? Does anybody have an idea what might distinguish them? Okay, tapasya is part of the answer, but before we get to tapasya, because that's what Brahma acted on, he heard the two syllables, tapa. But why did that make sense to him? Inquisitive faith, yes. Because, okay. Translation?
That he had pious credits that leads to bhakti.
Okay, he had pious credits that leads to bhakti. But there's one basic thing. I already gave it. I said that's what the class is going to be about today.
Purpose.
He saw purpose to things. Therefore, when he heard tapa, he said, okay, there's a purpose. we read today in the purport here, it says, tapasya means voluntary acceptance of bodily pains to achieve some higher end of life. So Brahma, he could understand there's a higher end to life. It's not just meaningless. There's a purpose to my existence. And my job is to therefore find out what is that purpose. So when he heard tapa, he could say, okay, I'm getting some clue here of what I need to do to find the purpose of what I'm supposed to do. That's the difference, having a purpose in life. And of course, this goes right along with the discussion that we're reading currently in Srimad Bhagavatam, because these are all in answer to the questions by the sages. We're still very much close to those questions, six questions by the sages that are the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the first purpose is, what is the ultimate goal of life? There's some higher purpose. So Brahma understood it understood the syllables tapa, that are meant for understanding getting a higher understanding of my circumstances and of what I'm supposed to do. And that's what Srimad Bhagavatam is offering us here. But to achieve that higher purpose, we have to see ourselves not as products of this material energy, but as spirit soul. If we continue to see ourselves and calculate what's going on around us based on the idea that I'm this material body, then we're going to miss the higher goal in life, the higher meaning in life. Because it is a fact. What's a fact about this material body and the material circumstances we find ourselves in? What is a fact about that?
Temporary.
It's asat. If you want to throw in asat, achit, full of ignorance, and nirananda, full of suffering, you can throw them in too. But it's a temporary situation. So that's not going to help us in reaching a higher goal. So we have to see ourselves as different from our bodily situations. And in that way, we can really start making progress to higher goals in life. But do we do that? In your daily life, maybe I should answer it also, but in your daily life, how often do you find yourself thinking of yourself as spirit soul, as opposed to thinking of yourself, I'm this body?
You don't
think at all. Well, that's another problem.
Right now, we are thinking because you said it.
Yeah, well, we should think ourselves like that. We should think ourselves as spirit souls. That will make a big difference. Yesterday, Tamahar Prabhu was talking about different types of motivation that we have. And he divided them into external motivations and internal motivations. As long as we remain focused on or inspired by external or material circumstantial reasons, then we'll see the world in that way. And ultimately we'll become frustrated at the temporary, full of suffering nature that we'll find ourselves in. But if we start seeing ourselves with internal motivation, we can change even, not only do we develop as spiritual beings, but we can change our experience with material nature. We can change our experience with material nature. Prabhupada gives that simple example about a man driving a car and another car comes along and hits his car. He jumps out, "You hit me!" He's totally identifying with his car, and so therefore he feels personally, "I was violated, I was hit by you." But if that same person became a little detached from his material possessions, what was mentioned here, how one loses, by culture of knowledge, one becomes unattached to hearth and home and becomes conscious of the miseries due to death, old age, and disease. So if we become a little detached by cultivating knowledge that I'm not this body, acting on the nature of his spirit soul, we can see that we become less affected. Material nature has less of a grip on us. When our car gets hit like that, we'll say, "Okay, anyway, I got insurance. You know, we don't have to worry about me being personally violated." So we can see that. We can see the benefit. There's a practical benefit to us of becoming detached from the miseries of this world by seeing ourselves as spirit souls. Now, once we have established that, we understand that there's a higher purpose in life, and that's in the spiritual realm, not in terms of material facility. The next question is, well, how do we become purified, stay purified, work towards a higher goal on a spiritual platform? That becomes the question. By being engaged all the time? Yes, that's one way of doing it. But there's a lot of ways of doing it, and that's kind of what the problem is. There's a lot of ways, even recommended in the Vedas, even recommended in Bhagavad Gita. There's different ways recommended for how to achieve this goal of a spiritual, purposeful life. What are some of the things in Bhagavad Gita that are mentioned, different processes? Madan? Okay, approaching a bona fide spiritual master and inquiring, yes. Others? More broad?
Sarva Dharma Parichaya, which says, "Give up all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. I shall remove all your sinful reactions to
that." You know, I love talking to devotees, because devotees, they just like I'm asking a question, I expect to get, well, there's three processes, jnana, karma, yoga, these kind of things mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, the yoga ladder. Right? But devotees immediately go, right, to surrender to Krishna, find a spiritual master. No confusion about the purpose of a devotee. But a lot of people out there are confused when they read Bhagavad Gita. Yesterday when I was preparing for the class, I searched on the internet about Bhagavad Gita, and I came up with a list of 10 ways in which the Bhagavad Gita defines the word yoga. 10 words. And none of the 10 had anything to do with Krishna the person. Yoga, but yoga is one path that's recommended by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita for progressing along the path of the ultimate goal of life, pursuing the purposeful ultimate game of life, goal of life. So yoga is there. What else is described like that?
Jnana.
Jnana is described in the Bhagavad Gita as a path. So yoga, jnana, karma, which is varnashram, system that's also mentioned. These, so,
well,
charity, a lot of different types of activities are given. Why is that? Why doesn't Bhagavad Gita say, yes?
Because not all paths appeal to everyone in the same way. In some way, we have a different path that attracts people in different ways. So there are different walks of life.
Yeah, very good. There are many different kinds of people out there, he's saying. And so one path is not going to attract everybody. So there are a lot of paths out there that are mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. But it's ultimately resolved, right? I mean, does Krishna leave it like that? A lot of people think like that. That Bhagavad Gita is saying that, well, you know, your path, my path, it's all the same. It's okay. Yeah, to think that all paths lead to Krishna equally or something like that. Maybe over time, maybe in different circumstances. So not that we want to throw out any of these things. They're always good. Just like somebody mentioned charity. And we're talking about tapasya. Krishna says these things should never be given up. Isn't charity one of the things that should never be given up? Yeah, so it's not that these things are bad, but this idea that it all leads to the same path, it's okay. Yeah, that's a mistake. Because Krishna does clarify in the Bhagavad Gita what he expects. What's the verse? There are many. Shamasana? Yeah, okay, well there's two things, two verses that Janmasmi mentioned. There's Sarvadhamma Parichaya Mamekam Saranam Vraja, where Krishna says, forget about all these other dharmas or these paths that I've mentioned and just surrender unto me. And don't worry about obligations that might have been due according to those other paths. I'll take care of everything, just surrender to me. There's that. And there's also another verse that he mentioned, Yayatam Mam Papajante Tam Sataiva Jamayaham Mamavart Manavartante. What's the last line? Manushya Partha Sarvasha. He says directly that, no, it's not that all paths lead to me equally, but as you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly. So, he explains all these paths, and as you take them, you get certain results, different destinations. By surrendering completely to Krishna, as he advises at the end of Bhagavad Gita, you get Krishna. But if you take other paths, you may get other rewards. So it's important for the purposeful execution of life to know these things and not get caught in different paths. Even Srila Vyasadeva himself, when he compiled all the Vedas and divided them and prepared them, he was still unsatisfied because he hadn't, as revealed by his spiritual master Narada Muni, he hadn't specifically glorified the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And the fault was that others, particularly in Kali Yuga, when they get on these other paths, they'll get stuck there. They won't be able to go to completion. They'll get stuck. And so that's a fault. You're actually doing a detriment to the people in general because they'll get stuck and not be able to progress forward. So Prabhupada made a point about all the literatures that we have, that they're so consistent. And so the same idea that we present in Bhagavad Gita with different paths, it was also discussed in a very elevated conversation that took place between Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just to show the consistency. It was called Ramananda Sambhag. And in that discussion, Lord Chaitanya was asking Ramananda Roy to describe different purposeful paths for the people in general. And so Ramananda Roy first started talking about Varnashram and the duties that are associated with there, and for the different spiritual orders of life and the social orders of life. There are many, many duties that come along with that. We don't come into this world without obligations. When we're born into the world, we have so many duties that are expected of us. And these are found in the Varnashram system. But what was Lord Chaitanya's response when Ramananda Roy was asked to describe the purposeful use of, the meaningful use of life, and he described Varnashram? What was the response?
He said, that's external.
He said, that's external. Meaning what? What does that's external mean? Yes, mainly it's related to the body. Now, we rejected the body as a vehicle for the purposeful life 20 minutes ago. So, that didn't satisfy Chaitanya. So, Lord Chaitanya just said, tell me more. And then there's a whole progression of descriptions of different purposeful purposes that are found that Lord Chaitanya objected. He objected to karma yoga, jnana, even jnana misra bhakti. He rejected all these things as external. And he would only accept when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Ramananda Roy would describe how that jnana udagyana impresam udapashya mante eva jnana stita sudhikatim tanavan manobir. Anyway, can you read the translation? Do you have it there?
Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and with their body, words, and mind offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. That's from Lord Brahma's prayers to Lord Krishna, and it's in Bhagavatam 10.14.3.
Okay, so in that verse, then it wasn't external anymore, it was internal. The motivation was completely based on the spirit soul, the existence of the spirit soul, free from the contamination of material energy. Even though one was situated in that, it was internal because the focus was on the spirit soul completely, not the material body and the circumstances. So Krishna consciousness, or reaching the ultimate goal of life, is more about focusing on the spiritual, not focusing on how to get rid of the material. Lord Chaitanya accepts that. That wasn't external, that was internal. And that's what we have to ultimately do. We have to do just as this verse that we're reading today says. It describes how Vasudeva is the goal of all these different paths. Same paths we're talking about in Bhagavad Gita, same paths Ramana Maharaj and Lord Chaitanya were talking about. Veda, knowledge, sacrifice, yoga, fruitive activities, knowledge, tapasya, dharma. All these things, the goal of all these things is Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead. So that's what we need to focus. That's how we'll have access to a purposeful life. Otherwise, we'll go on in this material world forever, sometimes realizing the meaningless of life, sometimes not, sometimes going after it with quite much enthusiasm. So, anyone have any comments, questions, reflections, anything? Yes, Madame Mara.
Nowadays, they talk about intelligent design. So could we use this as the next question that naturally comes up? If it's intelligence, there's a purpose. And make that jump, because it seems like they've only got to the first part where there's some intelligence. But intelligence means there's a purpose. So could we introduce this idea?
Well, that's our job. That's the purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to tell people this is the purpose of life and this is how you execute it. So if you're intelligent, you'll take to it. But how many take? The world is not, there's not many intelligent people.
So from your class, now you are describing coming from the bodily platform, you know, the description coming up. So it appears that one has to be like very intelligent to take up this path of Krishna consciousness and do a lot of in-depth study to understand. So is it by chanting Hare Krishna and following the regulative principles, are those good enough? Or, you know, we have to like really get behind all these details to understand, or are they interrelated, or how are they interrelated, if it is?
Chanting Hare Krishna is everything. We chanted the bhajan in the leading up to the festival of the Holy Name. But Hari led it. Hari Nama Eva Kevalam was the refrain. Was anybody here? Hari Nama Eva Kevalam. The Holy Name is everything. So everything can be achieved just by the Holy Name. Not just getting free from karma, jnana, the cycle of karma, jnana, yoga, and these external activities. But in the internal energy, there's different levels as well. And we can achieve the highest level of love of Krishna by simply chanting Hare Krishna. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced, and that's what astonished Rupa Goswami. He was astonished. He said, Namo Mahavanandaya, Krishna Prema Padayate, Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Tivise Namaha. He was astonished that the highest thing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving, Krishna Prema, in the mood of the gopis, the highest is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu giving? Harinam. He's not giving studying so many books. Of course, we study. He's also giving that. But he's just saying that just chant. Take this chanting. That's all that's necessary. But if you want to read so many books, we also have Prabhupada said. So you can take. If we have faith in that, Harinama Eva Kevalam, that the Holy Name is everything, then will get everything. Yayitam mampavajan tetam sthavibhijamayam. As you surrender, then you'll get everything. Yes.
For us devotees who are practicing for quite a few years, chanting the holy name, we understand that the goal, the ultimate goal is Krishna, the beginning, the middle, and the end. But, for example, Varnashram is created for purification before we come to the stage of bhava or prema, or like, we have to engage ourselves in activities were related to karma, to yoga, to tapasya, on a daily basis, basically. The purpose is to understand Krishna by doing that. Like, if I'm a hatha yogi practitioner, I teach people how to engage, you know, the bodily exercises to you know, to not understand Krishna like, you know, but to help them to some degree to physical exercises beneficial to spiritual consciousness as well.
But we don't see those things as an end in themselves. Rather, they're dependent on Krishna. We read in the purport today, it says here that the process, however, includes several bodily features such as asana, dhyana, pranayama, and meditation, and all of them are meant for concentrating upon the localized aspect of Vasudeva represented as the Paramatma. So it's not that those things, any of them, are ends in themselves. Rather, they are dependent on bhakti. So bhakti is the goal of those things. If we practice them without the goal of attaining love for Krishna, then they're described in Srimad Bhagavatam as Shrama Evahi Kevalam, only so much useless labor. And so, yes, as I said before, we're not rejecting these programs or saying they're Maya or something like that, but to the degree that they are connected with Krishna, their real purpose is executed. And we have a responsibility, those of us who have taken this or who are aspiring for Krishna consciousness and to give it to others. We have to understand it ourselves, otherwise it becomes one of those bridge programs where you never get over the bridge, you stay on the bridge. We don't want to stay on the bridge. We want people to come to bhakti. So Prabhupada, at the end, he wanted to teach us Varnashram. Why? Because it's something he hadn't given us before, a necessary supplement? No, it was because because they are falling down. In other words, because it was difficult, then don't go back to a culture which is soul-killing, but go to a culture and live your life and progress spiritually in a soul-enhancing culture, which is Varnashram, rather than the soul-killing situation, circumstances we find around us in the material world.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Such a beautiful class. Sometimes I don't understand. I'll consider like a pure devotee, and then he falls. What is the cause for him to like forget everything that he learned in this process?
Well, when he falls, there was one point in time historically in ISKCON when somebody asked Prabhupada, how many pure devotees do you have? Or something like that. Maybe it was the opposite. It was like, how many people have given up what you've given them in Krishna consciousness. But either way, Prabhupada's answer was, there's a few. In other words, a very small number. So he didn't see that there was so many people that took it and then went away. In other words, so many people fall down. We all know ourselves from our history, our involvement in the movement. We had so many devotees around us and sometimes they go away. But Prabhupada didn't see a loss for them. Well, they've gone away, they've lost everything. No, whatever they gave to Krishna, Krishna noted, and it's in their eternal bank account. So, I don't know whether it's best to speak in terms of people giving up Krishna consciousness when maybe there may just be covered over for a short period of time or something. It's, they'd rather see what they've taken, how much they've taken. Prabhupada has given, and on his behalf, we're all giving. And it may not appear that anyone's taking anything at all, but then we hear these miraculous stories. Somebody told me one yesterday about, at the Gator Harinam, Divyanga was telling me. Someone came up to him and said, he asked him for, started talking to him basically and tell him how glad he was to see the devotees out there. He took prasadam as a student at UF. And then he started saying, recently, my friend got, then he asked him, do you have one of those cookbooks? He asked Divyanga. Can you imagine? Of all the devotees he's talking to, he's going to talk to Divyanga, asking him for a book. So he asked him, do you have one of those cookbooks? So he told him, yeah. He said, one of my friends got it in a parking lot recently. And that means they got it from Divyanga. And so Divyanga was enthused by that. He felt that Lord Nityananda was reciprocating with him, telling him a story that how someone on the other end who got the book. And it made a difference. The point is, the book to his friend, the prasadam that he took when he was a student at UF, they're just little things. Some would say they're nothing, but they're life-changing events. They're life-changing events. Not just life in this life, but they're the souls. Liberation, basically, is starting to happen. And so whatever little we do or anyone does is to their eternal credit. And that should be the focus. That's a soul-centered view of the world as opposed to a material, bodily view of the world. So I'd rather see it like that. So maybe I can't answer your question, but that's...
I just wanted to thank you very much for the answer you gave me, but I think also just distributing the books only, it's not good going only to help the society, because people in general, they want to see how to apply our philosophy in our practical life. Like Varnasrama, it's not just Prabhupada introduced it only. It's on the Vedas, in the books, in 7th Canto. Extensively talks about how the importance of established Varnasrama. Because people, they see, okay, I received the book, I studied the book, I might understand or not, but how in my life I will apply that philosophy unless I see the society of Krishna consciousness practicing in their homes, and like have farm communities, schools.
Well, farm communities, you mentioned, that's where Prabhupada wanted to teach it. He was going to teach us Varnashrama. He was going to Gita Nagari to do it. So he meant for our farm communities, and you're putting it right in our face, that the big challenge we have, that our farm communities can show how people can live Krishna consciousness. And it would be on that kind of a model, as Prabhupada indicated, by his desire to teach Varnashrama. and have it displayed at our farm communities. So we have a ways to go in fulfilling that.
The verse that Lord Chaitanya accepted as not being external does combine, you know, the, like it starts out, those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, so that means anashram basically, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and with their body, words, and mind, offer all respects to descriptions of your personalities and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations. So the, you know, that's got to be there. You know, we've got to be situated properly in order to make progress. You know, that's kind of a foundational thing. But the main thing, as you sustain, the main purpose is that we hear and chant, that we engage in the process of bhakti with you know, full heart and soul, and greatly determined and enthusiastic, and that's not external. But we deal with the other. You know, we deal with that successfully. If we don't deal with it, then it causes problems, as we've seen. You know, and that's why Prabhupada was so motivated. But that's not the main thrust. The main thrust is chanting Hare Krishna, studying Prabhupada's books. My 2 cents.
Okay, we'll end there.